Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host. I am thrilled to be able to introduce you several superb analysts and co-combatants in the war for the free world that we wage here each weekday and evening. We'll be starting with Diana West for two segments, a marvelous contributor to the Sharia, the Threat to America volume the Center published last year, and we will be visiting with her for, as I say, two segments. We'll be also talking with Christian Adams, a veteran of the Holder Justice Department, who came in from the cold, about what's happening in the DOJ these days and how it might bear, if you can believe it, on Guam and our strategic interests out there. We'll also be talking in segment four with Gordon Chang, one of our regulars, about Asia, including Guam, but also what's going on in communist China. But first, let's get to Diana West without further ado. Diana, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. It's great to have you with us, especially on the occasion of the Afghan Future Conference, for want of a better term. What do you make of what they're doing at the moment in terms of plighting our troth, as the Secretary of State has done, to the future of Afghanistan, even after we leave at the end of 2014?
Well, it makes my it raises my hackles and makes my blood run cold, frankly, because I see this endless escapade continuing with further deepening and entrenching of our involvement. I don't know if the new conference will be bringing up this concept called the New Silk Road, but this is a very disturbing wild goose chase that the EU and America and associates seem to be signing on to, which makes Afghanistan a central player in a patchwork of fantasy that will put a pipeline through from Asia into Europe, it seems, with a network of roads and agreements and trade. And you just wonder what these people have been smoking, given that these roads are not safe to travel
today, let alone we make them even more valuable.
Yeah. Let alone with this notion of this incredible, highway of wonder and commerce. It's utterly mad, but that does seem to be where they are cycling.
Yeah. Diana, I mean, get to the nub of the matter. The idea that once U.S. forces, NATO forces, if you will, withdraw in their entirety at the end of 2014 under the president's current plan, what is likely to be left in Afghanistan, in your estimation, specifically with respect to the Taliban? And we'll talk about Pakistan in a bit as well. But what kind of environment are we likely to bequeath to the Afghan people when we depart?
We will bequeath an environment of chaos and tribal strife and Taliban influence and Iranian influence, and an absolute wreckage of American public works projects, bases, material, money down the tube, and many, many thousands of young Americans with disabilities and crippling disabilities that will be following them for the rest of their lives, and we will be paying for them as we should for the rest of our lives. So this is an absolute disaster.
And to what extent, Diana West, do you attribute this to misbegotten policy, specifically the counterinsurgency strategy known as COIN?
I put this down entirely to the what are sometimes known as the COIN Denistas, the proponents of what is essentially liberalism with guns. The Great Society Goes to Afghanistan is how I've often thought of it. It's an idea of remaking humanity in some beautiful image on the backs of the American military. And, you know, as we see in throughout history, you have fanatics, ideological fanatics, whether they're trying to remake humanity in the farms of the Ukraine in the 1930s, as the communists did, and collectivization killing, what, 6-7 million people in the process, or you see ideologues going to Afghanistan and deciding to remake Afghan culture, Islamic culture, in some UN human rights model. You see ideologues clashing with reality, and you see the little people dying, whether it's Afghans themselves or, in this sense, American service members, not to disparage them as little people, but just as people who are not in control of their destiny under orders and are in the hands of irresponsible, I would suggest criminally irresponsible leaders who have not made a correct study of the culture, of the religion, in devising these classroom academic exercises in, again, remaking the Afghan man.
Yeah. Diana West is our guest. She is the author of Death of the Grown-Up, How America's Arrested Development is Bringing Down Western Civilization. She is a columnist at the Washington Examiner and a woman who contributes absolutely spectacularly, in my way of thinking, to the public policy debate. And Diana, you've recently been writing about one of these characters who seemingly has exercised outsized influence on those in the military, particularly engaged in this remaking of the Afghan man, Greg Mortensen. Tell us about him and what we now know about him that might further call into question the advisability of following his counsel on COIN and related issues.
Well, I'm glad you asked, Frank, because this is, I think, one of the great underreported stories of the year. Greg Mortensen, of course, is the world-famous author of Three Cups of Tea, which became the almost a cultish object to the American military brass. Three Cups of Tea has been exposed as a fraudulent piece of work created by Mortensen to describe a fantasy of his life in Afghanistan, setting up schools for children, conquering people through books and learning, including, you know, numbers of anecdotes and meetings that just never happened. And this was uncovered by the journalist John Krakauer and 60 Minutes earlier this year.
So in effect, this is a story about how you could win hearts and minds through massive nation building, really. And this has become, not just as a result of Greg Mortensen, but in part as a result of his imprimatur, the sort of reigning doctrine of the U.S. military at the moment. Would you characterize it that way?
Exactly. I mean, this is a very concrete and specific point to get across. Three Cups of Tea was seized upon by leading strategists of the United States military, including General Petraeus, General McChrystal, on down, as the realization...
Admiral Mike Mullen, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs.
And Admiral Mike Mullen, who had private meetings with Mortensen. Colonel Kalenda, I believe, was the first. He's a very prominent COIN strategist. He was the first to, as they say, reach out to Greg Mortensen, and this all happened when the wives of these officers started reading this book, I guess, stateside, and passed it on to first Colonel Kalenda, who passed it on to his superiors in the chain of command, and this was seized upon, in a sense, as the living, breathing proof that General Petraeus's famous manual of counterinsurgency, which came out in 2006. Had a real life application. Here it was happening. COIN in real life. And then when this book was unmasked as a fraud, the schools did not operate the monies that, Mortensen had been raising, millions of dollars, by the way, from school children and all kinds of, charitable giving, was not going for these purposes. The money was not going to these charitable purposes, but was actually going into private planes and all kinds of living expenses for Mortensen. This never had a course correction. We have heard nothing out of the military in terms of any sort of about face, if you will. This book had entered into the training curricula four COIN officers and soldiers going into the field were recommended that they read Three Cups of Tea. So the impact of this book, which was fantasy, it has this tremendous real-life application, and I would submit has caused and led to innumerable casualties of our service members who walk around taking off their protective gear in this effort to make win hearts and minds, as the book and as General Petraeus has ordered.
Yeah.
Yes.
Diana, we're going to pause for just a moment. We'll be back with Diana West right after this.
We want to know what you think. Leave your comments at 1-800-332-7131.
I was able to lose the 80 pounds I gained due to pregnancy. It was pretty easy to eat whatever I wanted and not think about it.
The Meta System from Judy Singer has been helping make weight loss easier for a quarter century.
My husband's grandmother used it 20 years ago to lose weight for a wedding and said it was the only way to go.
The Meta System also has an excellent support staff.
They were very supportive. The first time that I ordered the product, they called me and suggested that I order a lower dosage to begin with. They didn't want me to jump the gun right off the bat, and it was nice to know that they actually cared.
And the weight loss is so dramatic, people wonder.
With the Meta System, I've got many questions about how I managed raising a baby and working full-time and lose the weight and eat whatever I wanted.
People who use it recommend it.
I suggested the Meta System to my mother, and she has lost 30 pounds.
Learn more about weight loss with Judy Singer's The Meta System by calling 800-711-JUDY, 800-711-JUDY. The Meta System from Judy Singer, the powerful all-natural way to lose weight, 800-711-JUDY.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit ShariaTheThreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
Experts say there's no shortage of crude oil.
There really is no shortage of oil at the moment.
So why do gasoline prices keep going up?
There's all this fear that's out there, and that really goes a long way to making prices go up.
And home prices seem to be headed even lower.
We really aren't seeing any markets that are showing any sustained recovery at this point.
Now more than ever, is this a timeout or a double dip?
To halt the economy's recovery in its tracks.
1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back with Diana West, a marvelous contributor to the public policy debate through her writings at the Washington Examiner, through her book, The Death of the Grown-Up, through her contributions to Sharia, the Threat to America, and much, much more. And Diana, we were talking about a somewhat disheartening, I have to say, analysis that you've done of the strategy that we're trying to apply in Afghanistan. And you've also written rather scathingly, and I think, again, appropriately so, about the sort of larger practice of Islamization of the U.S. military. It's not just rules of engagement and the COIN strategy in Afghanistan. It seems as though our forces are really being instructed to submit to Sharia doctrine. Tell us how that's manifesting itself and what it might mean.
Yes, well, I've prefaced my remarks by saying that it's all of the above. The submission is COIN. The submission is the rules of engagement, and it is the more overt acts of Islamization. What I mean by this is that it's all knit together in the doctrine of submission in according a kind of respect to Islamic culture that the religion demands, and that in the minds of our generals and civilian policymakers, the strategy demands. So it's actually all quite, it's all quite tightly knit together. The most specific instance of this, there have been two in recent weeks that have just really kind of topped all. One would be the decision at Walter Reed Medical Center here in Bethesda to prevent visitors from bringing in Bibles to wounded troops. This was specifically the policy directive of the chief of staff of Walter Reed. When it came to light this past week due to a very...
This is here in the United States of America.
Here in the United States of America.
This is not Afghanistan where we've burned Bibles and we've proscribed their entrance into the country and so on. This is at Walter Reed, now at Bethesda in
Naval
Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. Radio Fox News radio reporter named Todd Starnes had, I think, the scoop of the year. And have you seen any pickup of this story? I have not. But this was the policy of the chief of staff of Walter Reed to prohibit, specifically named the Bible, did not specifically name the Quran, however. The order was rescinded after the story broke. And you had Representative King denouncing it on the floor of the House. So this is quite a fast turnaround. We'll see how it goes. More troubling, and I think more ingrained, is a directive out of the United States. It's not a directive, I misspoke, but a suggestion, a teaching tool out of the United States Marine Corps, which is going to troops deploying to Afghanistan from one of their cultural instruction centers, and it is in the literal form of rules offered by a contractor hired by the Marines to teach deploying Marines, not to urinate or spit in the direction of Mecca. Now, Mecca is 2,000 miles away from Afghanistan, which I mention only because this is part of an Islamic mindset in which the entire world revolves around Mecca, and an Islamic way of life. When I started writing about this, I found out, I didn't know right away, but I did find out that this literally comes out of a canonical hadith, which of course means the accepted sayings and acts of Muhammad. So that this came straight from what is considered Islamic law, being taught to United States Marines. Now the Marines will tell you that this is not official core doctrine, and therefore my writing about it is, I don't know, wrong. But it's being taught by an instructor, an Afghan Muslim, not incidentally, hired by the Marines to instruct deploying Marines on how to act, how to behave.
And Diana West again is our guest. Do you think that this is symptomatic of these two anecdotes that you've just described, of a larger practice that in the interest of not giving offense, in the interest of trying to, enlist the hearts and minds of those we are interacting with in places like Afghanistan, and I guess for that matter, Iraq, is fundamentally signaling not only an accommodation or even submission, but an embrace of this Sharia program in a way that has perhaps far-reaching implications, not just for our fighting men and women in uniform at the moment, but what they do and say and become afterwards.
I do believe that, which is why it's so troubling, particularly because the Marine Corps brass does not seem to understand this point at all. The Marine Corps Times actually wrote an editorial about this very issue, indirectly in response to what I'd been writing and some other people had been writing, and had said that it was actually a safety measure because there have been so many instances where Afghan security forces have fired on Americans inside the wire. Now, we're not talking about Taliban shooting Americans. We're talking about Afghan troops or Afghan security forces that we are training, that we are living with, that we are asking our young people to live with, shooting them. And this, to me, suggested the hugest submission of all, because it's telling Americans that in order to coexist safely with Afghans, with Muslims, they must adhere to Islamic law, or else, which is exactly exactly the point of Islamic conquest.
Of jihad, right. Let me ask you, Dinah West, while we've got you, to turn your those 16-inch guns of yours towards another target here. Next week, Hillary Clinton, the Secretary of State, will be meeting with representatives of the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, the so-called OIC, to see if she can't find a way to bridge differences between Sharia blasphemy laws, which basically, as you've just sort of been describing, brook no deviation at all from admiration for and accommodation to Sharia, the teachings of the Prophet, what have you, on the one hand, and on the other, the First Amendment of the United States, which says we can give offense to just about anybody we want to, just about any time we want to. How do you see this working out, Diane? And what does it suggest even that we're engaged in this kind of conversation with the so-called OIC?
Well, just as it's the pure policy is not to engage with terrorists, the pure policy should be not to engage with the OIC on an utterly unbridgeable difference, which is between Sharia restrictions on speech, on criticism, on thought, on conscience, and as you say, and as all Americans know, the First Amendment, which permits all thoughts, all conscience, all speech. So this, the idea that you even engage, you're already conceding the key moral point, the key principle that there is no such abridgment. So this can only end in an unhappy, kind of, I think, pressure that the Secretary of State and the Obama administration and anyone who signs on to it will be attempting to bring to bear on Americans, which is in the interest of, quote again, respect, quote marks, respect for Islam. People will not discuss it, will not have frank discussions, will not have honest discussions, will not have discussions. And this is the exact conditions under which Sharia spreads. And just as the Marines will come home and have this notion of where Mecca is when in, you know, in terms of their own personal hygiene, how can you stop? We will start having at the back of our heads the same kinds of checks on our own conscience and our own thought processes before we utter them. And that is about the scariest thing I've heard since 9/11.
Yeah, it is indeed. And yet we've heard practically nothing, as far as I can tell. It goes back to your earlier point in the mainstream media about this conference and what its implications might be.
You know why? I'll tell you why. Because they're already operating under these restrictions. The Islam has not been covered adequately, as you well know, since we've started this very difficult learning process.
Yeah, by our media as well as by our government. Dinah, we have to leave it at that. I'm sorry to say it's a subject that I know we will need to revisit with you early and often, including, I hope, in the immediate run-up to this conference next week. Thank you for the superb work you do, Dinah West, at the Washington Examiner, and in your writings elsewhere. Keep it up, and please keep coming back to us. Next up, we'll be speaking with Christian Adams about what is going on inside the Holder Justice Department and what it might mean for you. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hey parents, finding it hard to communicate with kids in today's world of ever-changing slang?
Hi son.
Excuse me?
Introducing the Communicizer. Just strap non-toxic Communicizer to your mouth and go from boring old man speak.
Oh, you know, I'm here if you want to talk.
To 100% off the chain.
Text me whenever, yo.
It's that easy.
Thanks to Communicizer, I'm relevant to my kids again. I mean, I'll fly, boo.
And now when you buy Communicizer, you get the auto-tune attachment free. Sounds so hip-hop, your kids will want to talk to you for hours.
I used to have to walk 3 miles uphill to school every morning, shorty.
I love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
Communicizer is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you.
For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
For decades, the Democratic Republic of Congo has endured economic collapse, poverty, and war. More than 3.5 million people have died in the conflict. Today, rebel forces continue to wreak havoc in the eastern Kivu provinces. The International Rescue Committee estimates that 30,000 children have been recruited as soldiers, and thousands more have lost their parents. Most of these children lack the most basic level of goods, security, and most especially, clean drinking water. Yet, there is a well of hope coming to eastern Congo in a village called Uvira. Washington, D.C.'s National Community Church is partnering with Global Outreach to bring a water pipeline to the Congo for Christ compound, an orphanage for children who have lost their parents to war and AIDS. Building a clean water source will sustain the school, provide for the children, and hundreds more in the village. Go to www.waterforcongo.com. Learn about the work of Global Outreach and give. You can be part of the community in Uvira. And like a well, you can be a source of hope in life. www.waterforcongo.com.
Hi, I'm Drew Brees, NFL quarterback for the New Orleans Saints, here with Bugs Bunny to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you fuel your body and your mind.
So what do you like to throw around the football like Drew?
Skateboard.
Play frisbee in the park.
Ride a bike.
Kick the soccer ball around.
Or dance in your room.
Just move it your way.
Because nothing makes you feel better than moving every day.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
So be a player.
You'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
Move it your way and be a player.
Get up and play an hour a day, Doc. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
That's right, at letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
I'm a champion. Realize checks mechanism.
Hi, Shaquille O'Neal for Rad. This is not your normal PSF. Don't be stupid. Don't drink and drive. If you're going to go out and have a good time, it's fine. But designate a driver to drive home. Just stop the madness. Don't drink and drive.
Public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Effney.
We're back, joined, I'm delighted to say, by J. Christian Adams. He is a man who has served his country with distinction in the Department of Justice from 2005 to 2010 as a man charged with protecting the rights of, among others, racial minorities, but also committed to the equal application of the law. And Christian has been involved in recent days in calling to our attention a matter that seems a world away, but bears directly on this issue. And I want to talk with you, Christian, about the immediate sort of microcosmic topic that you, again, are focusing our attention on, involving Guam, and how it sort of is symptomatic of what is happening within the Holder Justice Department more generally. So tell us, first of all, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. As always, it's great to have you with us.
Great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Delighted. And tell us a little bit what's at issue in the island of Guam. We obviously have a role there, but what's afoot at the moment?
Actually, something very frightening is taking place there. Guam, of course, is a U.S. territory. We can talk more about its strategic implications in a while, but there's bomber bases there, sub bases there, but there's also something else there, and that's an activist, militant, racially charged native population that is trying to throw off the American presence the American military presence in Guam. And what they have done is to concoct an election scheme to have a plebiscite, to have a status plebiscite. Do we want to remain part of the U.S.? Do we want to get rid of the United States and so forth? But what they've done to rig the election is that they're only allowing certain races to vote, the natives. They're only allowing the natives to vote in the state government-run, paid-for election, and they're excluding anybody who cannot trace their lineage back to someone who was there in the 1940s. So in other words, it excludes whites, it excludes Asians. It basically excludes anybody except a racial classification known as Chamorros, which are the natives on the island of Guam.
Hmm. So no matter how long people may have resided there and how much they consider themselves and have been considered by the government of Guam or government of the United States, for that matter, to be citizens of residents as well as citizens of Guam, these people are being simply denied the franchise. Is that what it basically comes down to?
Well, that's exactly right. Our plaintiff is a retired Air Force major named Dave Davis, who's lived on Guam since the 1970s. And he literally, in a scene from Selma, Alabama in 1962, went in to register to vote at the Guamanian Election Commission, a state government body, and he was literally denied the right to register to vote for this special election. They marked his ballot or his registration form is void, and they said you're not allowed to register because you're not a native Chamorro. And so what you have is a rigged system that's going to agitate against the U.S. military presence once this election takes place.
All right. Now, Eric Holder, the Attorney General of the United States, is a man who's big on minority rights. Surely he is throwing the weight of the Department of Justice and the Obama administration behind protecting the rights of the Dave Davises of the world, of Guam, more to the point, isn't he?
Well, that's the second part of the tragedy here, is that our client, Mr. Davis, says that he contacted the Justice Department voting section where I used to work, and he told them about this racially discriminatory election taking place there in April of 2009, just a few months after the inauguration. And he says they did absolutely nothing to help, that they've ignored it. And as Ray Hartwell has written in the Washington Times about this story, it's a twofer. It firstly allows Holder to keep up his pattern of racially enforcing the law in a racially unfair fashion, voting laws, but it also undermines American strategic strike capabilities because, you know, the enemy views things in a long-term way. And you start by dividing and causing problems for the American military in very small ways, which over time grows into large ones.
But now, this is particularly troubling because, as you say, Christian Adams, that the United States at the moment, the Obama administration most especially, is increasingly emphasizing the importance of the Pacific. In fact, there's a great pivot underway, we're being told, from, you know, Central and Central Asia and the Middle East to Asia. One would think that maintaining the U.S. military's capabilities to project power from Guam would be right up there with the very most important national priorities for this administration. So you're saying that Eric Holder is not only acting in a manner inconsistent with the racial equality provisions of the law, but also fundamentally at odds with what the Obama administration purportedly has in mind in terms of the U.S. military posture in the region. Where is Leon Panetta, for example, on this at the moment? Have we heard anything from him, the Secretary of Defense?
Well, we haven't. We have heard that Panetta has said that they might put a carrier strike force in Hawaii or Guam. You'll notice the big or, and whether or not it relates to this election, I can't say. But look, there are B-2 bomber bases. All the B-2s operate out of Guam when they operate in the Pacific Theater in the Far East. All the B-52s operate out of Guam. Fighter strike forces, nuclear attack submarines. Guam is an essential part of American strategic power in the Western Pacific. It is the most important base west of Hawaii in the entire American arsenal in the Pacific. And so, don't forget, I guess this is important to understand, the Obama Department of the Interior Department, which has authority over Guam in some respects, is actually using federal tax dollars to market and promote this racially discriminatory election. And so your tax dollars are going to encourage Chamorros to vote out the Yankee.
Well, this is a tremendously important problem, and I'm so grateful to you, Christian Adams, for bringing it to our attention here at Secure Freedom Radio. I know you've been writing on it, as have a few others elsewhere. This is not seemingly broken through the mainstream media, given the stakes, both in terms of the rule of law and in terms of the national security. It's outrageous, and we will be, I can assure you, continuing to follow it. When is the election to be held?
Well, what they are doing is registering voters for the election right now, and they want to hold it in 2014 to have the status plebiscite in 2014. And my client is challenging it in federal court to shut it down, so the election cannot take place unless the entire population of the island is allowed to participate. And don't forget that the Chamorros are only 36% of the population, so they've really racially rigged it to attempt to aid their racial cause.
Yeah. Christian, I know we're going to be giving therefore more time to this in the days ahead, and we hope you'll come back to us. Just very quickly, you came to public attention for a very courageous act of whistleblowing back in connection with the 2008 election, when the Holder Justice Department again deviated from the rule of law and the enforcement of racially blind application of the law. What has happened with that particular case of the new Black Panther Party, and how do you think this is all teeing up for the next election? And I have to ask you to do this in less than a minute.
Very good. Indeed, I brought that case. I wrote a book about it called Injustice, which is about this whole problem. How it's teeing up is firstly, very little has been done. I can't say that something that is on high priority of committees. But what's teeing up in the next election is problematic because there's a rotted unequal enforcement of the law, whether it pertains to corrupted voter rolls, whether it's racial issues. The Obama Holder Justice Department has turned the law into a weapon of turnout. And that's one thing I write about in the book.
Yeah. Critically important issues. We haven't done them full justice today, but we will have you back to talk about both the Guam story and the implications for good governance, which is critical to our national security, of course, of the unequal enforcement of the law by the Holder Justice Department as it bears on our elections. Christian Adams, in the meantime, thank you so much for your work for Injustice and for keeping us apprised. We'll look forward to talking with you again very soon. Next up, we have Gordon Chang on what's happening. We've got his thoughts on this Guam business, but also what's happening with China and much of Asia. Straight ahead.
I went from a size 18 down to a size 5, and I was able to keep it off.
Angie had some serious challenges.
I had gone through a divorce and put on quite a bit of weight. There was an accident where I was put on a lot of medication, and I put on over 60 pounds. I tried every kind of diet, but diets just did not work.
Diets don't work is something they hear a lot over at the MetaSystem from Judy Singer.
I heard about Judy Singer's MetaSystem, and I thought, well, couldn't hurt to call, and I called them up, and they told me all about the product, and I thought, well, I'll give it a try. From the first week that I was on it, I wasn't hungry a lot, and it was just amazing. Jumping about 3 months ahead, I dropped 63 pounds.
If you're ready for a natural product that cleanses your system and helps you lose fat, talk to a Judy Singer counselor about the MetaSystem. Call 1-800-711-JUDY. 1-800-711-JUDY. The MetaSystem from Judy Singer. Powerful, all-natural weight loss. 1-800-711-JUDY.
Hi. This is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real special forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a non-profit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its special forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home is built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Dennis Prager thinks there should be a simple standard to textbooks.
I'll tell you how I think a textbook should be written. This is what happened. Period.
That is the role of a text.
And if nearly everybody who did something important in American history, if 78.9% of them were WASP males, then I want 78.9% of the textbook to reflect that fact.
I care about truth.
That's why I'm not on the left.
The Dennis Prager Show. Well, in the morning and out to school. Weeknights at 10 on 1260 WRC. New Choice, Intelligent Talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone.
At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill,
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home, or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org. Even if it's just everyday stuff.
Like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really?
What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back, joined as we have the privilege of being each week by our friend Gordon Chang. He writes brilliantly for Forbes.com and World Affairs Journal every once in a while for other publications, including The Daily. And we'll be talking a little bit with him about a piece that appeared there this week. Gordon is also the author of The Coming Collapse of China. And that's a perennial issue that we're monitoring with him each week. Gordon, I wanted to start, though, with just a quick assessment by you of something we visited a moment ago about with our friend Christian Adams, namely Guam. And without getting into the particulars of this vote business there, which we talked about with Christian, just your appreciation of the strategic importance, particularly at this moment when we are supposedly pivoting to Asia, for the United States, for the United States military especially, of the facilities, the bases, and the power projection capability that's associated with that island of Guam.
Guam is absolutely critical because it is a dependent U.S. territory, which means that it's part of the United States. And it really means that our military bases there should be secure, because we're not talking about basing them in another country where we can always be evicted. And Guam, we have some very critical facilities such as Anderson Air Force Base, especially now when the Japanese are thinking of taking, for instance, the Marine Air Unit now at Futenma and perhaps moving it to Guam. So this is an important part of what we're going to be doing, especially as we confront the challenge of China. We need to have secure bases and some that are in back areas which are not so vulnerable to what the Chinese at this moment have.
In terms of anti-access capabilities. All the more reason why we're going to be closely following this business with Guam and the plebiscite that apparently is now being rigged with the help of the Obama administration against our military and our interests. More on that in the days ahead. But more immediately with you, Gordon Chang, you've written about a couple of things that I think it's worth discussing at least briefly, starting with the India China relationship. Some talks there that were postponed, evidently over some upset by the Chinese about India's hosting of the Dalai Lama. Give us the background there, and what do you think the implications are?
For years, the Indians and the Chinese have been talking about their disputed border, and there were supposed to be talks in a couple weeks ago. But what happened is that the Chinese tried to interfere in India's domestic affairs by having a Buddhist congregation moved away from India. And the reason why the Chinese wanted that to happen is not only because they are struggling with the Indians for the control of the hearts and minds of the world's Buddhists, but because one particular Buddhist, the Dalai Lama, was going to give the keynote address at the end of the congregation. Well, normally,
and the Dalai Lama, of course, is the spiritual leader of the Tibet Buddhist community.
And Beijing's very concerned about its hold over Tibet, which is really resembles a conquered country right now, and especially with what the Chinese are doing, very ugly there right now. So essentially, with regard to India, normally the Indian diplomats try to accommodate the Chinese. This time was too much, so the Indians told the Chinese to take a hike. And that, you know, they weren't going to be interfered with in their domestic affairs. And that's really good for India because it shows that New Delhi is not going to take a always supine attitude towards the Chinese. This will take a long time for the Indians to change their attitude, but at least they're starting, and that's a good thing.
And Gordon, in your piece in World Affairs Journal, you describe a number of other episodes elsewhere in the region that are seemingly indicative of a similar kind of backbone being found, if you will, by China's neighbors. Is there, in fact, a trend emerging here, and what does it mean in the way you think China will be handling these neighbors in the future?
For about a year and a half now, clearly Vietnam, Philippines, other countries in the region are starting to become increasingly concerned about Beijing's belligerent tone. And the one thing that was significant about the Indian affair is that it really marks Beijing's inability to adjust. Beijing suffered some real big setbacks in Honolulu, in Canberra, in Bali, and in Burma recently. And normally China would adjust to try to sort of move back and maybe placate their neighbors. What happened in India shows that Beijing is continuing its belligerent attitude towards its neighbors, despite the setbacks recently in November. And so this really means that the Chinese diplomats and the military are not adjusting. And this means that perhaps we're on a long-term collision course with the Chinese as they refuse to listen to countries in the region.
Now, this is a theme that you also picked up on, Gordon Chang, in a piece entitled Before the Storm in the Daily web posting. You talk about, as you did last week with us, China hitting an economic inflection point and the economy in China having its wheels coming off. That suggests to you China that may be more dangerous in the future. How so, and to what effect?
Well, the Communist Party has based its legitimacy recently for the last three decades on the continual delivery of prosperity. Since the end of September, it's been pretty clear that the Chinese economy, if not in free fall, clearly is slipping dramatically. And so I'm worried that Chinese leaders, in order to try to divert attention away from their deteriorating economy, are going to create military misadventure abroad. The Chinese military is already arrogant and is basically running its own independent foreign policy. This is an extremely dangerous situation, especially as we see in the South China Sea, where Beijing claims as its internal lake. This clashes with one consistent theme of American foreign policy for two centuries, and that is freedom of navigation. This is something we can't give up. And so clearly this is not a good situation. I mean, people talk about the possibility of conflict. Well, it's becoming quite real at this point.
And to the extent that that conflict might emerge, do you see that being first and foremost directed at us, or is it first and foremost directed at those in the sort of immediate vicinity, many of whom are allied with us, that might draw us in?
All of the above. We are going to be involved one way or another. Either the Chinese are going to challenge us directly, which they have in the past, and we've shied away from that, or if they're going to pick on a country that we have an alliance with, such as South Korea or Japan, or with which we are extremely friendly. So, for instance, Singapore or Vietnam. This is a regional problem, and the United States has some very important interests in this region, and so we are going to get involved one way or another. And it's important for the United States to show leadership because countries in the region want us to do so.
Yeah. Gordon Chang is our guest. Gordon, I particularly commend this piece, Before the Storm in the Daily of the 3rd of December, because you really stitch together how this works into the kind of, well, leadership transition and the rising power and influence of the military and the likelihood that, you know, a sort of, well, reversion to nationalism as a means of containing this domestic turbulence brought on by economic dislocation and contraction. It's really an extraordinary piece. And let's just close with something that you also wrote in your Forbes column about the need for consumption being increased in China as a way to contend with all of this. Doesn't sound like that's really in the cards under the circumstances you've just described.
Yes, China needs to have a sustainable economy, which means it needs domestic consumption, but it can't change its growth model in time, especially as the economy slides both at home and abroad. This means China is going to become a black hole, and God knows what's going to happen. The real problem here is that the Chinese military, they're extremely dangerous right now. They're spoiling for a fight. They're arrogant, and they really want to pick on one of their neighbors. And that means we're going to get involved because we need to keep the peace and stability in Asia, not only for ourselves, not only for countries in the region, but really for the entire international community.
Yeah. Gordon Chang, this certainly makes a powerful argument, among other things, for maintaining our presence and forward bases in Guam and Japan, for that matter, and also maintaining our power projection capabilities both in that region and elsewhere, because as we've discussed many times, the Chinese are not only now present, of course, in East Asia, but in a lot of other strategic choke points around the world. We will be following these issues closely with you, Gordon, and we appreciate very much your willingness to help us understand their implications both for us here in the United States and our friends and allies elsewhere. And we look forward to talking with you and with the rest of you tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.